Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. They were once the mall anchors of America, but the likes of Macy's and Sears are looking more like the dinosaurs of a bygone era. Between them, some 250 brick-and-mortar stores will close in the U.S. this year. And The Limited announced it is shutting down everywhere. Today, we're talking about the trend, what caused it, and what it portends. Joining us by phone is the director of research at MacroSavvy. That's a research firm in Virginia that tracks consumer and economic trends, Frank Badillo. Frank has more than 20 years' experience as a retail economist. In the past, he's worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers and Kantar Retail in Columbus. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also with us is Executive Vice President of Brand Strategy and Design at WD Partners. That's a retail consulting firm in Dublin. Lee Peterson, welcome to the show, Lee.
Hi, Ann.
So the stock market's doing well. Unemployment is low. Why a retail downward like this, Lee Peterson?
It's a change that is due to happen, I believe. There's a lot of disruption in the marketplace right now with online sales kind of being pervasive, and I think that we've reached a tipping point in online sales, so that's become pretty prevalent. And the other thing is, I think consumers more than anything are realizing that the bygone era of box stores and everything that they portained is really not as convenient as they perceived it to be a long time ago.
So, Frank Badillo, you're not surprised either, or what?
No, not surprised. These are tough times. It's a time of transition for retail. We're moving over the last 10 years from a period when boomers carried the market on their shoulders to the future. And in the long term, that future is going to be carried by millennials, but we're not there yet. And I think one of the challenges is that, in fact, when you look at some of the research I've been looking at, it's Gen X, the overlooked generation, that is the real opportunity there. And in trying to transition to the future, I think many retailers are maybe getting a bit of ahead of themselves in trying to appeal to a millennial generation that isn't ready to, you know, carry retail, and perhaps overlooking some of the opportunity among Gen X, which really represents the strength of the economy in terms of jobs and income growth.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're looking at the latest trend in the brick-and-mortar retail business, and that is closing. Sears is closing 100 stores, or 150 maybe. Macy's is closing 100 stores. The Limited is shutting down forever. With us in the studio, Lee Peterson. He's Executive Vice President of Brand Strategy and Design at WD Partners. That's a retail consulting firm in Dublin. And by phone, Frank Badillo. He's Director of Research at MacroSavvy. That's a research firm in Virginia that tracks consumer and economic trends. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, this reminds me, Lee Peterson and Frank Badillo, a little bit of what I went through during my career in newspapers and what happened. And the question was whether newspapers could sort of navigate that fraying rope bridge across the cavern from you know, where we were to the digital world. Lee Peterson, does that make sense? Is there a parallel there?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of disruption in the marketplace right now. And it is questionable as to whether or not a lot of companies will make it. And you're seeing a lot of store closures now. And I think you're going to see a lot more coming up this year. I mean, this year could be titled 2017, the year of store closures. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason for that is as retailers, we lost our ability to execute fundamentals like good service, good store design, you know, the idea of a merchant versus a procurement person just buying product. And I think a lot of that has caught up with us now. So in order to cross that chasm, as you said, I think it's going to take a massive change. As a matter of fact, I really believe that stores, physical brick and mortar stores in the future need to become something completely different than they are now.
Frank Badillo, thoughts about that parallel that I drew?
It's a good parallel. There are generational issues, as suggested by the newspaper comparison, where you've got an older generation that has long been the newspaper readers, and a younger generation that far less. You know, similarly in retail, we've got an older generation that have been the primary brick and mortar shoppers, a younger generation that is shifting online and moving toward Amazon and other retailers. And that's where it's a bit of a double whammy for retailers, because retail has often gone through phases of a new player in town pulling growth in its direction. You can go back in the day, whether it was, Woolworths to Sears to Walmart, and so forth. There's always been a new big player that's taken on, pulled growth away from the established players. And now it's Amazon, and they're the big one on the playground now. But in addition to that, the shift is coming amid these generational changes, and that's causing a lot of change for retailers to adapt to, both the demographic generational change as well as the industry level changes.
I agree with that, and especially the generational element in terms of who's running the companies. Because I think now you look at a lot of CEOs that are 60 years old, 55, 60 years old, and these are the people making decisions as to what's going to happen in the future. And I think, to have a mindset that equals the young people, I think you have to be somebody like a digital native like Jeff Bezos of Amazon. I mean, the idea of being a retailer and putting merchandise on a shelf is kind of over now. Think about what Bezos did with the Echo product. So now he's got a product in your kitchen. And in your kitchen, you just tell it to buy you some paper towels, and the paper towels show up at your doorstep. That's a different generational thinking.
It's changing our whole relationship to the process of buying stuff and why we buy it and what we buy.
Yes.
It's not just how we're buying it. It's everything.
Yeah, and as was just pointed out, if you're that type of consumer as well as that type of person, so now you're leading a company, it's very difficult to grasp the idea of like, okay, we're Walmart and we're going to create something that goes into everybody's kitchen that I can, artificial intelligence, that I can tell it to buy something new. I mean, that just probably never entered their minds.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at, I mentioned earlier that these, we've got the Macy's of the world, the Sears of the world. We have also got the Limited of the world. Those are very different operators, very different players in this world. But when a Sears or a Macy's starts shutting down stores like that, what's the Frank Padilla, what's the ripple effect on all those other stores at the mall?
Well, the mall has been in decline for a long period of time, and that is one thing to remember about some of these trends, be it the mall or big department stores. They've actually been in a long-term decline that predates the emergence of online retailing. When you look back at department stores, it was first the regional department stores that started to go by the wayside, and the Macy's and the Sears gained, but the overall department store sector has been in decline, and their share of retail has gone from double digits back 20, 30 years ago to low single digits currently. And what's happened now is that there are new competitors taking that share away, and now even the big players such as Macy's are on the ropes. The malls are even in bigger trouble than they were some years ago. So the bigger this isn't necessarily a new thing, but it's perhaps the latest thing and perhaps the straw that will break the camel's back and cause more dramatic change in the mall. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that what we're seeing with malls is that it's the B and C players that are in most trouble, the middle to lower end, and we're going to see more shakeout there definitely. The upper end has fared much better and has done better at evolving. And this whole divergence between upper and lower market is an important theme to consider. It's not all black and white or uniform in terms of the impacts. There are winners and losers here, and it follows sort of this income divide. And there will still be strong players at that upper end that will thrive, and most of the shakeout will be at that lower end.
When you're talking about upper end versus lower end, are you talking about Nordstrom's, Saks versus Macy's? I don't even know what's left in that category.
Yeah, Macy's kind of straddles middle to upper, but they tend to be more a bit more toward the middle as many shoppers have sort of tried to move up in their shopping. Definitely Sears is in that middle to lower. And then, yeah, your Nordstrom, Saks, and so forth are at the upper end. And then they've tended to fare better, and your more urban new types of shopping, you know, centers, developments have fared better. So there are definitely some key differences in who is winning and losing and who's likely to survive and thrive going forward.
I think Columbus is a great microcosm of what you're talking about, in that if you think about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, we had 6 or 7 shopping centers here. Now we have basically 2 with the closing of Macy's at Tuttle. I mean, that the decline of that mall is imminent as well. But we have Easton and Polaris, which are great centers. And those are higher-end centers with great tenant mix. There's a lot of restaurants. There's theaters. There's coffee bars. There's local restaurants, like Easton has done a really great job of that. At the same time, you see Westland struggling. Northland's gone. City Center is gone. What was the other one? I don't know. There's 2 or 3 other ones. But so that breakout in terms of demographics also applies, I think, just in general to the shopping center. Like the Macy's at Easton's probably doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about the changing marketplace at the mall. Macy's is closing 100 stores. Sears, which is Sears Holdings, which includes Kmart, are closing about 150 stores across the country. The Limited, which got its start here in Columbus, is closing its doors forever. Lots of changes. If you have any questions, give us a call, 614-292-8513. My guests by phone, Frank Badillo. He's director of research at Macrosavvy. That's a research firm in Virginia that tracks consumer and economic trends. And also here in the studio, Lee Peterson is Executive Vice President of Brand Strategy and Design at WD Partners. That's a retail consulting firm in Dublin. 614-292-8513 if you have a question, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The U.S. economy looks healthy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is nearing 20,000, and unemployment rates are low. But the brick-and-mortar retail sector is in a free fall. Macy's and Sears announced they are closing some 250 stores between them in 2017 alone, and the Limited is ceasing business everywhere. Online shopping numbers, however, continue to tick up. Still with me by phone, Frank Badillo, retail economist and director of research at Macrosavvy in Virginia. And also with me in the studio, Lee Peterson. He's Executive Vice President of Brand Strategy and Design at WD Partners, a retail consulting firm in Dublin. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, Frank Badillo, while we were off air, we were talking about what we did over the holidays for in terms of shopping, and everyone sort of agreed here that it's you know, it was a lot of it was online. And for me, though, it really came down to figuring out which of those retail players is going to meet my needs, which means picking up the phone on the first ring, having a real person on the other end of the line, that kind of a thing. There's still a customer service piece to all of this, right?
Definitely. It matters for some shoppers more than others. You look at some of the research, what tends to be the case is that for those older shoppers, those boomers in particular, they value that service, and it needs to be a key component of what retailers need to offer to bring those people into the stores. For younger people, it's a different mix of things, and some of the more online-focused tools are more important there. So it matters in some places more than others.
So, all right, so I'm one of the oldsters. That's why I like that person over the talking to me on the phone. So, Lee Peterson, what is that younger customer looking for in an online experience then?
I don't think a lot of that is different in terms of generations, in terms of some of those expectations like customer service. I mean, I think if you go into like a fast casual restaurant, like here in town we have Fox in the Snow, customer service is outstanding, and it's all young people as well as online shopping. But I think one of the things about online shopping was those guys were fast seconds. And we used to have an expression in retail that it was best to be the fast second. So they looked at the atmosphere and what was going on out there in retail right now. And some of this stuff was really easy to conquer, like customer service. If you provide good customer service after 20 years of not having it, then suddenly, you know, you whether you're on the telephone or you're in a store or whether you're doing something online, and it becomes that easy and that wonderful, you're sold.
And let me add to that, because I think the difference for the younger generation is that a component of the service has, you know, not just an online but a mobile aspect. You look at some of the numbers, and just for like the clothing category, some 20% of millennials are shopping via mobile sites, and it's you know a fraction of that, maybe 5% for baby boomers. So when millennials are looking for that service aspect, you know, they're looking to have some of the information handy on their mobile device from the retailer, even if they're in the store, and that's where service just means something a little different for millennials than it necessarily means for boomers, for example.
You mean as far as the mobile aspect that I see it online, I want to go in the store and I want to touch it, it better be there?
Well, beyond that, you have your site is mobile ready and you can get the information on your mobile device, not just on a desktop.
Gotcha. Joan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My question relates more to specialty retail. My name is Joan, and I own On Paper, which is a stationery gift and invitation shop in the Short North.
Yeah.
We just started our 20th year, and I'm pretty optimistic about the place of small specialty stores. And I'm just would love to hear comments from your guests about what their thoughts are on the independent retailer.
I love your store. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
What about
Thank
that?
You,
what,
I love your show.
Thanks. What about that? Is there still a place for that, Lee Peterson?
Oh yeah, I think more so than ever. I think that's where you're seeing a real split. And Frank is talking about generations, and I think the younger generation especially likes to shop in one-off stores. We have an expression that you don't have to go to stores anymore. You have to want to go to a store. And that wasn't the case 10, 15 years ago. So I want to go to On Paper because it's a great store. Or I want to go to Fox in the Snow. Or I want to go to Stoff's. I was at Stoff's this morning. And it's just a great atmosphere.
It's an experience. Great
store. Yeah. And there's really kind of nothing online about that. But I want to go there. I can't buy it online. I can't buy that experience. I can't buy that feeling online. And what On Paper has and the others that I mentioned is exactly that. Great customer service, great merchant eye. They buy things that are really great, I think. The store itself is wonderful. You know, there's a lot of antiques in there. I mean, you just can't find that in a store where everything is stacking high and let it fly.
Right. Frank Badillo, you agree?
Totally agree, and we especially see that with Gen X and millennials in particular. They're looking for things that are unique, different. They're looking for things beyond just price. And it's interesting. Doing some research, and I'll say this: my research is based not just on economic data, but I use a lot of shopper data from Prosper Insights and Analytics, which, by the way, is based there in Columbus. And I was looking at some of their data just on the health and beauty category, which is one of the categories where, for example, Walmart has been hardest hit. They've lost quite a few shoppers in that category over time. And if you look at Gen X in that category, you see that in terms of what's important to them, price and nearby location is far less important today than it was 5 years ago as the economy has improved. And what's more important are things like quality, brands, and selection, the things that favor unique items, small players who are able to put together quality merchandise that is different and appeals to these generations that are looking for those things in particular.
Hmm. Joan, thanks a lot for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the future of retail, what it looks like when the giants like Macy's and Sears are announced plans to close between them more than 250 stores. Also, The Limited. It started here in Columbus. It became an international symbol of retail merchandising, and it's over. Of course, Les Wexner sold that company about 10 years ago. It's been run by a larger,
private
equity firm since then. And, you know, that raises a question, an interesting question. Lee Peterson is, you know, back when Les Wexner owned it, it was still felt like something real. When these private equity firms start buying up these stores, are they losing something in the mix? Is that sort of the whole contradiction of what we were just talking about, of what people want these days?
Well, I don't know. In my bio, I worked there for 11 years. I worked for 11 years. And I could tell you, I mean, it was a merchant-driven mentality. And so we were trained to look at a store as if it was our own. So, you know, if the coat department needed help and I was in shirts, we would talk to the coat department and try to help them and try to get as much sales as possible. Like, how were the displays? How was the store design? And I think with private equity or somebody who's basically looking at the numbers, you can hire people like that. But when you've got the final say, it's just a different mentality completely. And how you think about how you go about executing retail is just much different. So I think in that case, in the Limited's case, that was sort of the beginning of the end, in that, you know, looking at financials only is only a small part of the equation.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Ann. I am a proud boomer. I still like to go to brick-and-mortar stores. But I'm curious because definitely the trend away from brick-and-mortar is obvious. But what I'm wondering is, why do we continue to see large construction projects of brick-and-mortar places, like, for example, the Tanger Outlets, which is a huge development.
Up in Delaware, yeah.
Yeah, and way away from Center City. How do these types of places, are outlet malls unique? You know, why will people still invest in those kinds of things?
Well, and I don't know if this is sort of, it's not exactly in the same category, but they're putting a big, gigantic IKEA up in Columbus.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah.
What about that, Frank Badillo?
Well, in particular, regarding IKEA and home goods in general, I think this does relate to my point earlier about Gen X being the short-term opportunity for retailing. What we've seen in recent years is that the housing market has begun to bounce back. It's being led by these Gen X households, you know, who are in their early to, you know, middle years of raising a family. They've been the ones buying the homes, moving into newer neighborhoods, and driving some opportunity at the brick-and-mortar level. These new neighborhoods, these new areas represent places that retail does need to shift to at the same time that some retail is moving online. And that does create opportunity, in particular, I believe, for home goods, housing-related retailers. And IKEA, you know, does make sense. It does not have a wide presence across the country, and I could see opportunity there for them to expand in certain places.
We've always felt like where retail needs to go right now, physical retail, is to become two things. Number one, a fulfillment center, and number two, more of a playground, you know, where you can touch product, where you can talk to people, where you can see other people, and you can engage. And I think IKEA is that. I mean, is perfectly that. So you can go and you go from showroom to showroom to showroom, and you can talk to other people about it. You talk to intelligent employees, and you go in the back and you pick it up, and your order is fulfilled one way or another. Having said that, IKEA has also announced that they're opening about a dozen, I think 12 to 15 smaller stores to get into neighborhoods so they can become more urban. And instead of taking up, you know, 200,000 or 300,000 square feet and being somewhere out in a farm field, they also announced that they're only going to open one more store through the course of this year, but more than 12 to 15 smaller stores. So they're also changing quite a bit.
So you see IKEA doing something like a Short North installation, or?
But, you know, potentially.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah. But how do they then achieve, you said fulfillment center. I mean, I think meaning they've got what you want when you get there.
Or buy online, pick up in store.
Okay.
Which is huge. We've done a lot of research on that, asking consumers what they like about shopping online and what they like about shopping in stores. And one of the things that they liked about shopping online in terms of digital connection was to be able to shop online and go pick it up, like on their way home from
the
store.
Why is that simpler than having it delivered?
The way that customers outlined to us that they liked it is that they could drive up to the store, you would put it in their trunk.
I see.
And then further down the road was, I'll go in the parking lot, I'll go to a station right in the front of the store, pick it up, and then go home. But, yeah, and I think there's also a tax factor, a speed factor. I don't have to wait 2 days to get something. And then also, I don't have to get out of my car.
God forbid. Get out of our cars. Tim in Clintonville, thanks a lot for that call. We have an email from Celia. She asks, what effect does merchandise have on sales? My shopping experience demonstrated a lack of age-appropriate clothing for women seniors. Skirts are too short and necklines are sometimes too low. Consequently, I ordered from a catalog that offered that merchandise. Frank Badillo, are these stores to have an? I mean, is she shopping at the wrong stores to begin with, and that's just the issue?
Well, I do believe that sometimes this is a case of the retailer changing, and it's the shopper that's sort of staying put. And this gets back to my point about some retailers perhaps rushing a bit to appeal to millennials.
I see.
And forgetting that they have a strong base of Gen X and older shoppers who really represent the base of their shoppers. And as a result, some of those shoppers who are used to going into a retailer are seeing fashions that are skewing younger as those retailers try to appeal to millennials, and they kind of forget or don't put enough focus on keeping those core shoppers. And I think that is a key part of the challenge here. This is about straddling generations and recognizing that, yes, millennials are the future, and the retailer does need to work to appeal to them and gain their shopping behavior going forward. But at the same time, recognizing that you've got that strong base of shoppers, and increasingly that strong base are Gen X, and what do you need to do to keep them in the store at the same time you'd appeal to millennials?
Yeah. Back to her question, I think she's just not looking in the right place.
I mean, I take Forever 21 at its word. That's just not – never more 21. So,
well, I think, too, you know, we always talk about the long tail in online shopping, and I – I can't think of.
You say long tail?
The long tail.
Okay.
So if you look at a graph of a product assortment, it goes down almost into a tail where you find the oddest thing, a Crosby, Stills, and Nash album from 1971.
On Amazon.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. Or online, it could be a merchant in Germany, and you can buy that and have it shipped to your house. So I can't think of anything over the course of the last 5 years I haven't been able to find online.
Right.
I mean, you may question quality, or you may say, gee, is that the right thing or whatever, but you'll find it.
I've been looking for a poster for about 10 years. I still haven't found it. We have an email from Cynthia. I think she brings up a really interesting point. She says, we have the skeletons of Eastland and Westland, but these old areas become ground for new opportunities for immigrants. And there are whole sections of Morris Road. Frank Badillo, probably not familiar with it, but it used to be the bustling, that's where Northern Mall was, and it was very bustling, and it went downhill. But it is bustling again with a different kind of customer. Lee Peterson?
Yeah, I think there's definitely opportunity for smaller retail, for more local retail.
That's more that specialty than a gun, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Short North is bustling as well. I think the Short North is more vibrant than it's ever been. When I first moved here, it was a disaster. We had a Halloween party in an empty building down there. I can't even fathom that now. It would probably cost you $600 to get in.
Yes, but, I mean, we had, I think Joan from On Paper, Colin, that's one of the few stores that have survived down in the Short North. It's gone to a lot of, corporate type of outlets.
That's because of the popularity. So the real estate has been driven upwards, and
right.
There's a lot of hotels that are, dropping in. And so the lobby just looks like much more expensive than it used to be. And I think that's a natural progression for a neighborhood.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, Frank Badillo, how retail is just constantly in a state of flux, right?
That is the story. It is constant change. And by the way, I did live for 15 years in Columbus for Retail Forward, OSU grad, so very, very familiar with Columbus.
Gotcha.
And, this does sort of get us to the question of urban versus suburban retailing and where the focus and the change and some of these more urban settings or the areas left behind as retailing has moved on to the, still further outer suburbs, what happens to them. And, you do see around the country, I think, and I see it here in Richmond, Virginia, for example, where some of these older neighborhoods do become, fertile new ground for millennials to, become the neighborhood places, and some of it with a diverse immigrant flavor. And that's going to be one of the I think fascinating things to see going forward, how millennials come in and reshape some of these neighborhoods going forward. That said, I think in the near term, and that's where there's sort of a multi-part to this. You sort of need an urban strategy. You need an urban approach to retail or thinking about retail. And that's one thing, and an excuse toward a younger generation. And then the whole real estate issues are very different in suburban and rural, where you've got perhaps a little older population. And that's another aspect, the whole demographic geographic is a whole another aspect that adds to the complexity and disruption that retailers are facing these days. It's just harder to understand where to be and what to be providing your shoppers in any given neighborhood.
We will continue our conversation about the future of retail and how it reflects changes outside the brick and mortar. You just heard from Frank Badillo. He's director of research at MacroSavvy. That's a research firm in Virginia that tracks consumer and economic trends. And here with me, Lee Peterson. He's executive vice president of brand strategy and design at WD Partners. That's a retail consulting firm in Dublin. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A rash of recent store closures by Macy's, Sears, and The Limited are threatening the survival of shopping malls across the U.S. Meanwhile, online shopping and smart technology are changing how Americans buy. In Seattle, for instance, Amazon is opening a fully automated grocery store without checkout lines or billing. Instead, everything gets charged directly to an Amazon account. We're talking about the future of brick-and-mortar retail. Still with me, Lee Peterson. He is Executive Vice President of Brand Strategy and Design at WD Partners. That's a consulting firm in Dublin. And also Frank Badillo. He's a retail economist and director of research at Macro Savvy in Virginia. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Frank Badillo, what about the Targets that are starting to downsize and focus their product and their appeal to, say, that college crowd? They're doing that here in Columbus. They've done it in Minnesota. I thought they should have done something like that at City Center Mall years ago before it, of course, was torn down and replaced with a beautiful, fantastic park and amphitheater. But Frank Badillo?
Yes, smaller boxes are definitely the future. We're seeing that across retailer, and it's, it is time for the Targets and Walmarts of the world to move toward the smaller boxes and get closer to the neighborhoods where people are at. I mean, we talked a bit about the diversity of neighborhoods and all, and those smaller boxes just allow those the big boxes, the Targets and the Walmarts, to be where their core shoppers are and that they need to be. So we'll see that there, and it's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of small boxes. When you go down into and think of grocery and think of the whether it's the Aldi, the Lidl's, the Trader Joe's, that those neighborhood markets that are cropping up, and we're seeing Target and Walmart playing catch up in that regard, and hopefully it's not too late for them.
Can something like Walmart play that game, though? I mean, isn't volume so critical, Lee Peterson?
I was just going to say it's really difficult. If Walmart opens one big box store, that annual revenue would probably take 20 smaller box stores. So I think a lot of things have to happen. To say nothing about operations, you know, everything's shipped to a Walmart store in pallets. And then when you ship to a smaller store, it's going to be much smaller boxes. You need smaller trucks. You need a different loading dock. Operations are much, much different for a smaller store than it is for a large store. But I think that they're going to have to come to grips with the fact that as their online sales increase, and for Walmart, it's increasing significantly, 15 to 20% at least every quarter online sales. So as online sales increase, that might make up for the revenue that they're going to lose in larger stores. But I still don't think it's going to move the needle like one big box or two big box would. And I think that's why you see Walmart bail. I mean, they've bailed on their Express store and a couple other smaller box stores, too.
Michael in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Hi. So I'm a millennial, and this downward trend in brick-and-mortar stores is interesting. So my question is, where do you think this will end up? I know you guys were talking about 2017 possibly being the year of store closures. Do we envision a future, potentially several decades down the line, in which there are no brick-and-mortar stores?
Frank Badillo?
I don't see that. I think there always will be a place for brick-and-mortar stores. The question is just how many, to what degree. When you look at it now, on average, online sales represent 10 to 15% of total retail sales. So you still have 85 to 90% of retail being fulfilled by brick-and-mortar stores. Now, there are big differences by category. In certain categories, that may be the case. So, for example, in electronics, you could see the day where there are very few, if any, electronics stores, which Best Buy may not like to hear that, but I think they're seeing the effects of that. But in other categories, particularly consumables, food and drug, that there in particular, there will always be a place. And then the question becomes, well, where will they be? And this is where I think the challenge does be rise for Walmart, because increasingly when it comes to food, more shoppers are turning to local neighborhood markets for more of their shopping, and that's coming at the detriment of the big Walmart supercenters. So Walmart is losing that grocery shopping trip to those smaller boxes, and the question is, how do they stop that and keep their big box supercenters relevant in that future world? And there we'll see some pullback in the amount of stores, brick-and-mortar stores, in that category. And the question is, well, what does it look like in the future? What's the right mix?
I don't think there's any question that there's going to be. We just have too many stores. We opened more stores from 1985 to the recession in 2008 than we had the previous 100 years.
What's the end game in doing that? Why? I mean, these, you know, the big joke is always about the pharmacies, how they just whip up these pharmacies, Walgreens or CVS or whatever it might be, and then a few years later it closes and they shut it down and it's a big old empty store sitting there for years. Why do they do that?
Growth. I think the number looks good to Wall Street when you open 100 stores and then your revenue increases and, you know, hopefully profits as well. I think we're actually experiencing the end game of all that, though, having thousands and thousands of stores when you really don't need them. I believe the United States has, some of the last numbers I saw, 46 square foot per person of retail. And a lot of countries in Europe have 15 and 16. And as you know, they have a lot of smaller stores. They have more local stores. So I think that basically we went through a retail, physical retail bubble.
That was distinctly American.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michael, thanks a lot for that call. Pat? In Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Anne.
Sure.
My partner and I opened a boutique in Upper Arlington in October, and my family thought I was crazy because internet sales going, you know, growing and growing. And we have been doing wonderfully. And I think what you were talking about, it being the small specialty store, our store is Fab Boutique, and it's at Lane Avenue Shopping Center. And women are coming in, and they're loving the customer service. They're loving the fact that they're seeing brands they can't see. And I literally had, like, four people this week talk about Macy's and how, you know, they're not going to miss Macy's. You know, they get why Macy's isn't succeeding. They can't find a person to help them. They are tired of the same brand. So it's been really rewarding for us, and I'm hopeful, but I do get nervous about the internet.
Are you thinking about working in the internet?
You know, down the line, it's a completely different animal. I mean, it's almost like having two different businesses. So we might, but what we love is the customer service. We love seeing people come in. We love working with them, helping them put, you know, outfits together. And I think that that's always going to exist, that people like that, you know, not maybe in electronics, but I think in apparel. I'd love to hear what Lee thinks about that.
Yeah, Lee Peterson.
I think you definitely need a website. I mean, you need a website, and you're gonna have to go through some kind of online fulfillment. You just need to start looking at it right away. But I think I don't think there's any question as to what you're talking about. We've had maybe 30 years of poor customer service and poor store design and poor commodity-oriented product and every store kind of looking the same. So it's almost a surprise, you know, when you go into a store and somebody's really nice and they help you try something on and they'll take a return and they talk to you and they'll call you up when something comes in. I like I said before, I think that I look at that as blocking and tackling. Having said that, I think you'll win, but you also need to be online.
Okay, Pat, there you go. Thanks a lot for your call. Anne, a kind of related question. Anne in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a couple questions for the commentators. How do you think, after listening yesterday to some of the conversation about Columbus fiscal economy, mm-hmm. how do you think the layoff of all these people and the ending of these stores is going to affect Columbus? And how do you think that the people who've lost these jobs, how do you see them being reabsorbed into the economy?
Yeah. Frank Badillo, how does that happen? What do we know about the ripple effects of these kinds of shutdowns?
Well, what we know about the economy across the country is that there's just so much unevenness. And most of the growth right now nationally is occurring in the West and the Southeast. And frankly, across much of the Midwest and all the major cities in Ohio, they've struggled to grow on average. And that's where I don't know that there's any easy short-term answer. And a lot of that is going to be determined by, the coming year and what comes out of Washington, D.C., and whether, for example, companies have greater confidence to invest going forward than they did in the past, which may stimulate more growth in places like Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. So I don't necessarily see that there's any recovery or big boom on the horizon. I think it's possible for the longer term, but there's a lot of unanswered questions just about how places like Ohio are going to fare in terms of growth going forward.
Okay, Ann, thanks a lot. Lee Peterson, anything to add?
Yeah, I think that Frank knows a lot more about economics than I do, but I think innovation is destructive. No matter when it happens, when the steam engine came in,
or disruptive or something, but
both,
yeah.
It can be destructive as well. And when it happens really fast, like it has in the last 10 years, it's going to be extremely destructive. And I think we saw that a lot of people got left behind in terms of jobs. But as an example, Amazon has also opened a warehouse here and a digital center, and they're looking to hire people. I saw ads on television like Amazon needs people all holiday long, and I think therein you'll see the shift. Online retailers are going to have to hire people. They're still going to need people to do different things, I think, than retailers did do. But that's, to me, it's part of innovation, part of progress. It's just that when it happens fast, it's pretty painful.
Email from Amy. She says, I feel like we are discounting a shopping segment that is done at home or friends' homes. I have at least 10 friends selling everything from clothing to jewelry to high-end skincare to cleaning supplies, home goods, and more. It becomes an evening with friends and buying from and helping friends feel better than shopping at a big box store. I mean, that is an enduring segment of the retail or of the marketplace. Frank Badillo, is it? Do you see it necessarily growing, or is it going to be steady Eddie as she goes, or is that going to change too?
Well, I think across retail we're seeing more fragmentation of the opportunity and it's dividing lower versus upper end, and we're seeing and generationally as well, because we're seeing certain segments where there's an appeal for things that are different, that are more social, particularly at the younger opportunity end of the generations, and where those more personalized social type of selling really appeal to those younger generations. At the same time, at the lower end of the market, where we've seen this big uptick in the popularity of thrift stores, resale shops and so forth, as people look for new ways to save money. There's greater diversity of opportunity in retailing for growth, and that's where a lot of what we're seeing is this shift from the big guys. And although Amazon's the new big guy that's coming on board, there's still a growing opportunity and growth among these new types of retailing, be it the boutiques, the specialty stores, the online shops that are totally online and giving people the opportunity to get into retailing at low cost online. There's just greater diversity now, I think, than ever in terms of where retail growth is being found, and it's just not being found in those traditional places that we're used to seeing it.
Frank Badillo, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Frank Badillo is the director of research at MacroSavvy. That's a research firm in Virginia that tracks consumer and economic trends. And Lee Peterson, thanks for joining us as well.
Sure, my pleasure.
Lee Peterson is the executive vice president of brand strategy and design at WD Partners. That's a retail consulting firm in Dublin. Thanks for all your great calls and emails today. Appreciate you, took the time to listen to us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.